Others have mentioned about the radicalization of sort of political and economic reform in Venezuela. I'm going to talk today about radicalization within the agricultural sector and rural property ownership as one sector of the economy that's being reformed, and I'm going to take a closer look more specifically at the land reform law to shed light on its structure and implementation. So the motivating question of this particular project that I'm presenting, it really comes out of this literature on clientelism. We've talked about clientelism a couple of times. And the question here is sort of, how do incumbent parties distribute particularistic goods to enhance their electoral support? In particular, in the case of land reform in Venezuela, is there a political bias in the allocation of land under the law of land and agrarian development? And if so, how? There's, of course, a long history of land reform in Venezuela. There was a fairly large reform between 1960 and sort of the early 90s, in which about half or slightly more than half of the cultivable land in the state was passed through the reform sector. And there's been a lot of research on that earlier phase of land reform with considerable evidence that reform was sort of administered clientelistically. So it provides a little bit of the backdrop, perhaps, here. So give us a brief preview of the findings that I'll present to you today. First, most basically, I'll demonstrate that Chavistas are more likely to apply for land than sort of opposition members or people who are less easily identifiable, their political affiliations. And furthermore, conditional on applying, Chavez supporters are more likely to receive grants. And this is true particularly in states with pro-Chavez governors. They're actually less likely to receive land in states with opposition governors. And I'll talk about that, why that's the case. Furthermore, Chavez opponents in regions held by anti-Chavez governors are less likely to receive land. And again, I'll get into all these in a minute here in more detail. So furthermore, looking at sort of how individuals both enter and progress through the application process, results of looking at that, at details of that support this, as well as applicants that are effectively rejected by this land reform agency. And so let's get into some of the details here since we're limited on time. So the stated intent of the land reform law is to encourage agricultural production by redistributing or taxing latifundios and inefficiently used land and distributing that to people in the rural sector. So the land reform law in Venezuela started out fairly slowly in 2001. A few key elements of the reform law were struck down by the Supreme Court, although the reform law was later amended in 2005 and strengthened. And so since 2005, it's really sped up and centralized as well. So there's a few aspects of the reform law that I want to talk about more specifically, sort of what I call sort of ambiguities, you might call, in the reform law, or shortcomings of the law, aspects of it that lead to its politicization. So first is that in Venezuela today, there's actually no complete property registry. So it's unclear, what a latifundio actually is, according to this. So the law itself defines what a latifundio is. It's defined as properties larger than the regional average in a given area and with yield less than 80% of that suitable to its extent. But of course, it's unclear exactly what the regional average is because there's no complete property registry, and at the same time, this definition of what constitutes a latifundio is by itself sort of changing. So if there's a given region and, so the top sort of tier of properties or the largest properties are expropriated, well, then the definition of a latifundio in that region changes. Second, property registration is risky. So under this new land reform law, individuals are supposed to come to INTI, the Instituto Nacional de Tierras, to register their properties. And in order to do so, they need to technically prove their property title back to 1848. So if that individual hasn't lived in that property, since 1848, which many people have not, they have to prove sort of the line of titles back to that period. Of course, most people don't have this, and there's a lot of issues with earlier titles being ambiguous and extent and that sort of thing, whether they were delimited by, in some cases, delimited by trees or rivers that have sort of changed, that kind of thing, and subsequent titling is often built on these original titles. So that's problematic. Furthermore, I mentioned the earlier phase of land reform. About 75% of the land that was passed through the reform sector from that earlier period of reform, 1960 to the early 90s, about 75% was never titled. So again, you go to the land reform office in order to register your property. At the point at which you do so, INTI gives you a designation that your property is either considered to be idle, improvable, or productive. Of course, if your land's considered to be idle, then it's subject to expropriation. If it's considered to be improvable, then INTI basically makes a plan, sort of a two-year improvement plan for your property. And then, you know, if you don't comply with that, then your land is subject to expropriation or taxation of certain parts of it. So, furthermore, I mentioned this idea of efficiency, sort of using proper property sort of according to its social efficiency. That particular aspect of the law has been much discussed in Venezuela. It's particularly there's a number of issues with it. So this definition of efficient exploitation is rather vague. So it depends on a lot of different characteristics of a given property and a production on a given property. So soil quality inputs, time horizons, property characteristics, a range of different things. So it's left sort of a wide margin of interpretation for what this efficiency means for government functionaries who actually implement the law. So they've come up in a number of places with rules of thumb. So for instance, in the southern part of Venezuela, in Los Llanos, where there's a lot of cattle ranching, they've come up with this rule of thumb of sort of there should be one head of cattle per hectare. And if there's less than one head of cattle, then, you know, then the land is not being used efficiently and is then potentially subject to expropriation. Of course, there's actually some cases in which individuals have more than one head of cattle on a given state, and that land has actually also been targeted because the argument there is that it's being overproduced and that it's reducing the long-term efficiency of the property. So there's sort of this, sort of people are being pressed from both sides on this. In terms of how land moves into the reform sector, methods of targeting, so it comes both from below and from above. So according to the law, anyone in Venezuela can go to a given, can go to someone else's property and basically take that owner to INTI and say, you know, I think that this person's not using the property efficiently according to law, or it's too large an extent. And then the owner has to then basically, INTI gets involved in the process, and then the owner has to go to INTI, and if they have not registered the property already, have to do so. And we've already talked a little bit about that process. So that's one way in which the reform is done, sort of bottom up, individuals, you know, pointing out properties. And on the other hand, the government itself has also targeted a number of properties for expropriation movement into the reform sector. So, for example, if a government suspects a property is being used inefficiently, there's been a number of cases in which they've occupied properties, they're sending the National Guard to occupy properties, and in those cases, removing the landlord temporarily. So typically, there's sort of, obviously, this leads a lot of times to disruption in productivity. Productivity drops, and then at the point at which the land reform office or the land reform agents come to this to the property to do a study of the property and determine whether or not sort of production is being done efficiently, at that point, production has declined significantly, and then, you know, no longer is that property seen as being consistent or operating consistent within the law. So all those things, sort of sum up, and, you know, this ambiguity in the law, the role of government functionaries, and sort of applying it in local areas, and the availability of political preferences, we'll talk about in a minute here, through my Santa Deves, has led to allegations of political bias in the actual application of the law itself. And there's two main potential sources of bias. I mentioned first, the first order is sort of in who applies. So you might expect that if someone is, for example, a strong Chavista, they might go to the land reform office thinking they might have a better shot at getting land, even if their other, you know, other aspects of their application may not be as strong. So there could be that sort of potential bias on land, and then, say, members of the opposition think that they won't have as good a shot, so they don't apply to begin with. And then there's the second order question of even conditional upon application, who actually receives land, and how's that done? I'm going to focus mostly today on this latter part, and I'll just mention briefly the former part. So what's the the project here has been involved with a lot of data crunching, and using a few different sources. So on the one hand, we have data from MySanta, which people have already talked about. Sort of this people who signed this petition, about 3.5 million people who signed this petition to recall Chavez from office in 2004. And that information was subsequently merged with information on other sort of social demographic variables and packaged in the software program MySanta. And so this is just a shot of what this thing looks like. Probably a lot of you have seen this already. So you have, you know, basically an individual scheduling number, their name, their their address, whether or not they signed this petition, the key here being whether or not they signed this petition to either recall Chavez from office or recall opposition politicians. And then we also have some information about participation in other social programs. So that's sort of a background in terms of people's political, sort of expressed political preferences. And then we have data here from the Land Reform Office. Between April 2007 and February 2009, there were about 115,000 land grant applicants through this office. So really quite a number of people. And that this is true sort of across the country. There's this land reform program has been... it's generated interest across the country. So there's applicants in almost every municipality in Venezuela, but one, and a decent number sort of across the board. How does the, so who actually applies to this, who actually applies to this program? So this is a map here, just of Chavez opposition. This is, according to my Santa database, of course, this has changed over time with the different elections and that sort of thing. But this is mapped at the municipal level. This is increasing here in intensity. As it gets darker, and then this is land grant applicants through this land reform agency here on the right. And so, you know, opposition is in places where we might expect, of course. And land grant applications generally coming, again, from sort of agricultural areas. But there's a pretty decent, so while opposition is sort of, in generally speaking, in this part of the state here, a lot of the land reform is going on in this part of the state. And just to give some sense of what that kind of looks like. And it's a little bit more complicated than this, but the long and the short of it is that Chavistas are about 50% more likely to apply than, so people can, sure. I almost got a preliminary red card there. So people are, you could either have signed this petition to recall Chavez from office, you could have signed a petition to recall opposition politicians, or signed neither petition. And relative to the non-petition signers, Chavistas are about 50% more likely to apply for land through this program. A couple other things, older voters from more sparsely populated areas, more agricultural regions, as we might expect, are more likely to apply for land through the program, and also those involved are enrolled in other government social run programs. So this is the question then becomes who actually receives land. So conditional upon application, who are the ones who are actually receiving land through this program? So this figure here depicts where individuals are in the land reform process as of February 2009. So this referendum in for a constitutional amendment in February 2009. And so the stages of this process are listed in the key here. Everywhere, so approval, formal approval, whether you're... application has been sent to the legal office, property inspection, or whether you're just sort of in the earlier stages. And there's a couple trends that I want to point out here. So first of all, there's a number of people who sort of applicants who have sort of languished in the initial phases here, whose applications have been sent to the land reform office, but nothing was really done. That's particularly true of people who applied earlier in the reform program, or earlier in the program. Second, the time until sort of property inspection has monotonically decreased. So that's this part right here. Over time, and that's basically indicates that the reform program is picking up pace, that it's getting more intense over time. And finally, that there's pretty important shifts in the application process just prior to these two constitutional referendums. So just prior to the 2007 referendum and this 2009 referendum here. And, which could be suggestive of sort of the political story going on here. And then this is, don't worry too much about some of the details, I'll step through this. So this is just one of the analyses that I've done looking at whether or not an individual becomes a land reform beneficiary. So, you're coded as 1 if you're a land reform beneficiary, 0 if you're not, and then looking at all these different variables as predictors of whether or not you become a beneficiary. And so the key variables that I want to talk about here are basically interactions between an individual's political preferences, how they signed this petition for against Chavez or didn't sign, and the political affiliation of the governor of the state in which you reside. So the way in which the land reform program is structured right now is that the office in Caracas is where sort of the land reform office is where the ultimate decision about your petition is made, but your petition has to go through a state level land reform office. So there's interaction between the state level and then the national government, and so that sort of goes back and forth. People are interested more about that. We can talk about that in the Q&A. But anyways, these are sort of the key variables. a few sort of maybe a couple of technical things. The individuals here I group by sort of voting center at this at the sort of lower level at voting center to try and get it sort of more address this sort of issue of unobserved heterogeneity at the local level to try and make sure that we're comparing apples to apples as opposed to comparing people that look very different. So this is looking at, you know, within a given very sort of small unit, a unit of about 2,000 people, you know, looking at the variation in political preferences within those units and how that affects your likelihood of becoming a beneficiary. You know, you could expect, for example, that individuals in rural areas with higher rates of poverty are more likely to receive benefits and may also be more likely to be Chavez supporters. So Noam is going to talk a little bit more about that. Perhaps that's not quite as strong of an empirical complication or identification issue with this, but in any case, that was how I dealt with it. So again, the idea here is that this is sort of the punchline here, that in pro-Chavez individuals in states with PSUV governors or Chavista governors are about 40% more likely to receive land through this land reform program. However, for Chavistas, people who sign sort of to recall these opposition politicians from office are about 30% less likely to receive land in states that are held by opposition governors. So it demonstrates sort of the importance of the political linkages at the state and national level here. And in terms of talking about Chavez opponents, those who signed the recall petition to recall Chavez from office in 2004 were about 20% less likely to receive land than the petition non-signers, and that was in districts. So in districts generally held by anti-Chavez governors. So furthermore, those enrolled in other government-run social programs, these other misiones programs, about 10% more likely to receive land through the program. So I think I'm just about out of time here, so I'll run real quick through the last couple of things. Who is rejected from the program? Unfortunately, within this data, we don't actually have, there's no designation of someone who's actually rejected, but what effectively happens is if you remember that figure I put up earlier, essentially your application is sort of left to languish in the process. And if we look at those people who have been in the process for a really long period of time and whose applications have not advanced in any significant way, then you get basically a similar sort of story. The same sort of people, the people who are getting land are also those who tend not to languish in the process for a long period of time, and those who are sort of rejected are much more likely to be in that stage as well. This is all looking at the one side, sort of at the beneficiary side of this land reform program. But of course, there's the flip side too, the supply side, about whose property is actually moving into the reform sector. And so, if you take a look at that, generally speaking, you know, members who sign this recall petition, basically members of the opposition, are significantly more likely to have their property targeted through the land reform program. About 2.5 times the rate of land applicants, actually, and only about 3% of people whose properties were targeted could be identified as strong Chavez supporters. So, conclusion, you know, appears that the land reform program, as one sort of specific social program that Chavez is running, as might be expected, enables consideration of political preferences in the actual application. And then looking at the reform uptake from the first level stage, applicants tend to be Chavistas, tend to be Chavez, strong Chavez supporters, but that there's also sort of this bias in the second stage too, in the actual receipt stage, conditional upon application. Those who actually receive land tend to be stronger Chavez supporters, and those who are anti-Chavez tend to be less likely to receive land through this program. And again, that the state national political links matter here. Chavez supporters in states with anti-Chavez governors are less likely to receive land. And again, they're, you know, amongst Chavez supporters, again, that varies based on the political affiliation of your governor. So I'll leave it at that. And then, right now,